The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
At the Pan Am Games in Winnipeg, and in 1989 won the bronze medal at the World Juniors in Dartmouth. Therefore, be resolved that members of this House recognize Steve Giles, his parents, family, and coaches for producing in such a small province as ours, such an outstanding athlete that we can all be proud of, and wish him every success in the future. Mr. Speaker, I'd ask for waiver notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 12:42. We will finish at 1:42. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Board for the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children recently expressed their support for a public inquiry into the allegations of abuse suffered at the home. The Avalon Sexual Assault Centre, the African United Baptist Women's Institute, and thousands of Nova Scotians have signed petitions are calling on the government to commit to conducting a public inquiry. Legal experts have publicly stated that an inquiry can run concurrently with criminal investigations and civil suits. So my question to the Minister of Community Services is, will the government commit today to calling a full public inquiry into allegations of abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, as you know, that this whole situation is a very one that has a lot of deep emotions and hurt feelings, and it's a terrible situation. It's a historical situation. So because of the fact that it's historical, it doesn't sit within community services. It actually sits with justice. So I will pass the question along to my colleague in justice.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, want to echo the words of my colleague about the sensitivity around this issue and the harm that's been caused in the community. As far as the various groups, we received a number of correspondence. We are listening. We are evaluating the situation. And we are waiting for further details from the RCMP and their investigation. There are a number of components to this this matter. However, the sensitivity to it, and I want to assure the people in our gallery that we are listening.
No.
And that I've
talked to the gallery. Okay,
and that we're hearing what you're saying. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, many of these victims are coming forward and telling of horrific stories of abuse, Mr. Speaker. As children, they had nowhere to turn and nobody was looking out for their best interest, Mr. Speaker. We should do the right thing, Mr. Speaker. With legal support saying that we can go forward at the same time that criminal and civil suits are happening, my question to the Minister of Justice is, why is the government not doing so?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't come to this position without deep emotion on this matter. I want to assure anyone that's been affected to know that I personally, as a former police officer, have looked in the eyes of a child that's been abused. In fact, even the mere speaking of it here today causes me some concern from my past. I'm not going to succumb to the partisanship of the opposition parties to force us into a position. This requires clear discussion, listening to the community, and moving forward while respecting various processes. And I want to assure all that in my role as Attorney General and as the Minister of Justice, I will give, and I am giving, deep reflection and understanding to the issues, and I am hearing what you're having to say, and I will continue to progress.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, at no time has anybody in this caucus used this issue for partisanship, Mr. Speaker. As many times, Mr. Speaker, I know this government has gone over every word that I've said in this House and outside of this House on this particular issue. I said, Mr. Speaker, this is not to lay blame at the government's feet. They are in a position, though, to call for a public inquiry. All political parties, Mr. Speaker, have been in power when this abuse has happened, Mr. Speaker, alleged abuse has happened, Mr. Speaker. We have adults in our gallery today, Mr. Speaker, who when they were children, nobody listened. This is our opportunity to listen to them and give them an opportunity to have a full public hearing, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Deputy Premier. Why is the government refusing to call a full public inquiry into the allegations at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children and allow the healing to begin?
Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the Leader of the Official Opposition. You know, we've stated many times in this House that there is an investigation by the Provincial Police Force, the RCMP. There are civil litigation, and it's the government's position that, you know, we want to see this healing begin, Mr. Speaker, but there are other issues, and once those are complied with, then we will look at it with a different lens. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, we all want to live in a Nova Scotia where justice is done, where it is seen to be done, and where victims of crime have a public opportunity to tell their story so that it can never happen again. Mr. Speaker, for residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, for former residents, they are being denied that opportunity. They want all Nova Scotians to know the truth about what went on at that home, and so do we. My question for the Deputy Premier, will he commit today to calling a public inquiry where former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children can publicly be heard, and we can assure all Nova Scotians to a new generation that it can never happen again?
Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, we understand, you know, the emotional and the of what's going on here, these accusations, but as I said to the Leader of the Liberal Party, that there are some civil litigation going on. There's an RCMP investigation going on, and we will let that proceed before we take any further action.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, respected law professor Wayne McKay told CBC Radio the other day, and I quote directly, quote, "The law is pretty clear that you can have the two processes, a civil or criminal proceeding and a public inquiry, run in a parallel fashion." Mr. Speaker, even the board for the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children has said that they have no objection to a public inquiry proceeding at this time. The only roadblock to doing the right thing now is the NDP government. With all of this information, I now ask the Deputy Premier, will he stop the stalling, which has gone on for far too long, and give former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children what they deserve and desire, and that is a public inquiry to tell their stories and get on with the process of healing so this province can move forward in a more just way.
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, this is not about stalling, Mr. Speaker. This is about allowing the legal process to take its natural course of events. Again, that we certainly empathize with the alleged victims, Mr. Speaker, but what we've said before, and I'll say it again, that what we need here is to see the completion of the civil issues and the RCP investigation, and then we will look at this with a clearly different lens. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are many experts who have said that it may be 2020 before any civil action is finally settled. This has gone on far too long already, and it is not acceptable to tell people like former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children to wait until 2020 to have their stories told. Mr. Speaker, the government should today appoint an independent, qualified person to draw up the terms of reference for a proper public inquiry that can allow both the criminal and civil investigations to proceed while the healing of a public inquiry also goes on at the same time. Will the Deputy Premier today commit the government to naming a qualified independent person to draw up the terms of reference for a proper and just public inquiry?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
I regret, I guess, Mr. Speaker, to the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, my answer remains the same, Mr. Speaker, that we wish to have the other issues that are in front of those other bodies dealt with first. Then we will move forward from that point. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, in April 2011, the Department of Justice circulated a discussion paper and draft legislation to amend the Nova Scotia Limitations of Actions Act. The purpose of these changes was to modernize the existing act and to bring Nova Scotia in line with the rest of the country. There was an exception, however, in the discussion paper, as noted by Ray Wagner, a well-respected lawyer in Nova Scotia. In a submission to the Department of Justice, he wrote, quote, "There is one especially unfortunate exception. Nova Scotia's proposed legislation protects pedophiles," end quote. My question to the Minister of Justice is, why did this government circulate changes to the Limitation of Actions Act that they knew would prevent some victims of child sexual abuse from obtaining justice in our courts?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government and this minister does not protect pedophiles in any way. Criminal behavior and criminals need to be held accountable for their actions. There are processes in place to address that. And should the member have a particular example specific that he wishes to address within the legislation that needs to be reevaluated, more than happy to look at it.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Let me help the Minister. Speaker, former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children are being denied justice because of this government's unwillingness to lift the 6-year limit for civil cases in this province. Every province except for Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and Alberta has lifted the time limit on child sexual abuse claims. Victims of abuse are having their cases tossed because this government will not remove this limitation, the very limitation that is protecting those who have sexually abused children. And my question again to the minister is, will the government allow these victims their day in court and commit today to lifting the limitation period on cases of sexual abuse in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. As the Minister of Justice, I'm very committed to ensuring that all persons that are responsible for a criminal act in this province are taken to account, and that if there's barriers to holding people accountable for that, always open to looking at those issues. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Speaker, this government could have taken care of this problem. They put out a discussion paper. They got feedback that told them that the 6-year limitation period was preventing people who had suffered abuse from being able to bring their case to courts. Most Canadian provinces have moved that limit to 15 years, and yet, for some reason, we continue to lag behind. So for the minister to claim that somehow this is a new issue that I'm bringing to his attention, he knows that is not the case. He had the opportunity before to do the right thing, and it's never too late to do the right thing. So today, the minister knows this problem exists. The minister can take action to correct it. So my question today is, will the minister address this problem once and for all and agree today to tabling legislation to amend the Statute of Limitations Act in Nova Scotia for child sexual abuse claims.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, I want to reiterate that if there's ways to improve our legislation to hold people accountable for their actions, I'm always open for those discussions and dialogue and the protection and safety of our children. I spent a lifetime in that universe, and I'm still committed, will always be committed, and to do the right thing. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are looking to this government to call a public inquiry into allegations of abuse at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. The minister currently responsible for youth residential centres should have an interest in finding out truths and learning how our province can move on from this tragedy. A public inquiry can unearth systemic issues, right wrongs, and help us heal from the ills of our past. Will the Minister of Community Services please tell those victims who are looking to this government to call a public inquiry who is acting in their best interests at the NDP cabinet table?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, this entire caucus and cabinet are very concerned about the issue that's before us and that we are acting in the best interest. We are looking at every aspect of what took place historically. And I mention again historically, and each and every day the Department of Community Services looks at what the situation is of today and how we can improve that situation and make it better for the people of Nova Scotia. That's very important to us, and that's what we do every day. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we're talking about abused children. We're talking about institutional abuse. This government can do the right thing by these people, but they refuse. Will the Minister for Community Services please tell members of this House and those people who are counting on her government to call for a public inquiry, along with the over 1,500 people who have so far signed a petition in less than a week, why this NDP government refuses to stand up for justice, right a wrong, and call a public inquiry?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I explained before, there is a division between current and historical allegations. These are historical allegations, and as the member opposite knows, it sits within the Justice Department, so I will pass it along to my colleague from Justice.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As stated, there's processes that are in place here. Through the criminal process, there can be full preliminary inquiries to bring out information in the civil process. There's discovery. And I do want to separate, because I am taking a bit of exception to compartmentalizing this as the NDP government doing the right thing. I want to assure all that I am committed to doing the right thing and that we are working through the process. And I want all to know and listen across Nova Scotia that I am focused on this issue, that I'm aware and I am listening, and that I am deeply sensitive. At the same time, this is a historical issue that happened under other watches that we need to look at the total package of legal matters that were caused under the other party's umbrella, and we will definitely look into this and address it in its proper form.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think both parties on this side of the House have been clear about the historical nature of this particular problem. I think we've been very clear about that. But the fact of the matter is there's only one party that can call an inquiry right now, and that's the government, and that's the NDP government. The job of the government is to support our most vulnerable. As children, the victims at the Home for Colored Children had nowhere to turn. As adults, they're looking to this government to call a public inquiry, drop the statute of limitations, and support them in their healing. Will the Minister of Justice tell these people today that this government will support them in their healing and call for a public inquiry now?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. I will take responsibility for what we need to do to move forward. That is my job. It's my job to ensure that that in our system of justice, that allegations that are brought forward are fully investigated, that those that are accused have the right to be heard and have a fair trial hearing. We have two processes underway right at the moment. One is the criminal process, which I have made it very clear that I want to hear further from the RCMP in regards to this. We also have the civil process that's underway. I also want to assure all that I firmly support moving forward as we go through the processes and address the various issues, that the health and protection of our children and of our communities are utmost in my part of my focus completely. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Deputy Premier, I quoted respected law professor Wayne McKay in my previous question when he said that the law is pretty clear that you can have the two processes run in parallel, both a criminal or civil proceeding and a public inquiry at the same time. My question to the Deputy Premier, why is his legal opinion better than respected law professor Wayne McKay's?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I also know that Mr. McKay also said he understood why we were weighing the options, Mr. Speaker. But again, you know, I don't know how many times I have to tell the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party that we're looking at what's going on with the criminal investigation, civil investigation, and we have to weigh those things while we're weighing should there be or shouldn't there be an inquiry. I think these are the responsible ways to react to this situation. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you how many times he's going to have to repeat that answer, and that's as many as it takes to get to the right answer, which is to call a public inquiry. That's as many times as he's going to have to give that answer. Mr. Speaker, there are many, many examples in Nova Scotia and across the country where a public inquiry has happened at the same time as a criminal or civil investigation and proceeding. In Nova Scotia, it may be 2020 before this inquiry gets revisited again if the government continues down its current path. Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians know that justice delayed is justice denied. And so my question to the Deputy Premier, will he tell us why he believes it is okay to tell the former residents of the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children that they can wait from now until 2020 to get to a public vetting of what went wrong at the Home for Colored Children?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can assure the member of the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party that the good people that are in this gallery and elsewhere today, Mr. Speaker, will not have to wait till 2020, that this government will do the right thing, will do it sooner than later, and will do the right thing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if calling a public inquiry is the right thing, then I call on the government to do it now. Do the right thing now. The criminal and civil proceedings that the government points to will determine individual guilt or innocence. They will determine individual restitution or punishment or payment. But there are serious questions about the institutional nature of the abuse that went on at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children, and only a public inquiry can deal with the institutional questions and the systemic questions that the people in the gallery today want to know the answers to, and I believe, Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians want to know the answers to, so it can be assured that it will never happen again. So I will ask the Deputy Premier, as he just said, if this is the right thing, why not do the right thing today and call that public inquiry?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, you know, I'll reiterate what I've said on at least three occasions this afternoon. I'm on my feet, Mr. Speaker, that there's other issues. There's the RCMP criminal investigation. There's a civil one that I respectfully would say I disagree with the leader of the Progressive Conservatives Party's interpretation of that. We want to see that justice is done and it's done in the right way. So we will do the right thing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In a letter dated September 11, 2012, the Council of Chairs of Community Child Welfare Boards called on the Minister of Community Services to amend the Children and Family Services Act to include changes that community boards have been advocating for many years. These changes include changing the definition of child to include youth 16 to 18 years of age to meet the service gap these kids face and to, quote, produce better outcomes in the lives of children and families in Nova Scotia, end quote. And I'll table that. Will the minister please tell members of this House why she has not changed the definition of child in the Child and Family Services Act as per those long-standing recommendations?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite is correct that it has been years and years under their watch, under the Tory watch, that these same groups have asked for changes to the CFSA. And it takes time because if she understood legislation, it's very complicated and it's not just a matter of changing. And they know that.
Yeah.
It's not the matter of changing one word. It's opening up that legislation and then you can look at the entire legislation. So we want to do the right thing by being methodical with it and to also consult with people who are opposed to opening it and also consult with those people who are supporting the opening of that legislation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Perch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Community Services Committee unanimously passed a motion to, quote, consider the proposal to define a child as a person under the age of 19 years of age, as opposed to the present regime, 16 years of age, to which the minister responded, quote, the Child and Family Services Act is strong and provides protection for children, end quote. And I'll table those. Mr. Speaker, the community child welfare boards across the province are calling on the minister to change the definition of a child in the Act. Members of her own caucus supported a motion to change this definition, and I guess maybe they understand legislation. However, the minister is dragging her heels on this critical issue and is denying those youth important services. Will the minister take the advice of community boards and members of her own caucus and change the definition to meet the needs of Nova Scotia youth?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member does not understand the fact that these changes can be very complicated. There has been no dragging of anyone's feet. From the day, first day that I became Minister, I have been meeting with both the advocacy groups. We've been talking to those that have opposition to opening that legislation. As I said, it is complicated. You do not just open it and change one piece of legislation. When you open that up, there's many pieces of legislation that people have the opportunity and right in our democratic system here in Nova Scotia to express their concerns. So what we want to do, we're not rushing into making changes that will create issues in the future. We're being very strategic in how we do that. So something they don't understand, bringing both sides together to be able to work out a solution. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government changes language every day in bills. We have seen, in fact, that's mostly what all their bills are. That the ministers should suggest that somehow asking for a change which would better the lives of children is not appropriate or whatever, it is beyond belief. The minister... refuses to listen to the Council of Chairs of Community Child Welfare Boards. She refuses to listen to her own caucus members when they supported a motion calling on her to change legislation to change the definition of a child. In the September 11th letter sent to the minister from the Council of Chairs, it states, quote, "Minister, to be able to offer services to youth 16 to 18 years of age in our province is the most humane and caring act this government can do for children," end quote. Will the minister commit today? We don't ask her to do it today. We just ask her to commit today to members of this House that she will follow through on the most humane and caring act she can do and finally change the definition of a child in the Child and Family Services Act.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I already have said very clearly, we have been working towards that direction ever since I became a minister because I understand the difficulties with respect. It's not just going and doing it. That is the inexperience that's talking across the way. It's complicated, and I have met with the Council of Chairs. She can ask them that. I have been at their annual conference recently. They know my position. They know that I am working with them, along
order.
With...
Order, please. The Honourable Minister has... To... Order, please. The Honourable Minister has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Council of Chairs... know that I am working very closely with them. I've met with them many, many times. I have spoken at recently at their annual conference, so I don't think if they thought that I wasn't working with them, I would have been invited to be there to speak to them. And I'm also working with those from the legal side that have some issues with this. So you don't rush into these things. They didn't bother with it. They had every opportunity. That legislation's been around for years and years and years. So they have no right to sit over there and criticize a government that's been in a couple years.
The Honourable Member for Hans West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Health. Earlier this month, the Department of Health and Wellness issued a press release about the funding for new dialysis chairs that will help 40 patients from Tatamagush to Truro to Stewiacke. Mr. Speaker, in the release, the member for Truro Bible Hill explained that some patients endure life-saving dialysis treatment 3 days a week, 4 or 5 hours a day. Many questions, or many patients, Mr. Speaker, are elderly, do not have their own means of transportation, or have needed to find lodgings in Halifax to receive their life-saving treatment, she said. And, Mr. Speaker, that's all true, and I'll table that as I spoke from it. Mr. Speaker, but that isn't just true of patients in the Truro Bible Hill, Colchester area, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister of Health, why did government provide funding for dialysis in Colchester and East Hants, but nothing for patients living in West Hants?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. We know that dialysis is an important service that Nova Scotians seek to gain access to, Mr. Speaker. We recognize the burden that many Nova Scotians have when it comes to not only the time that's involved when you are receiving dialysis, but that travel time also is a burden, Mr. Speaker. That's why we continue to invest in dialysis. We recognize the importance of satellite dialysis units across the province, and I look forward to continuing to support dialysis services throughout Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Richard LaPierre of Ellershouse needs life-saving dialysis treatment. Richard and his wife, Frances, travel from their home in Berwick 3 times a week to get their treatment. And they've been doing this for many, many years, Mr. Speaker. This couple has maxed out every means of financial support that they have. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, why won't the minister provide the same peace of mind to the LaPierres that he has given 40 patients in Colchester and East Hants?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we knew that this was an area of service within the healthcare field that we needed to concentrate some efforts and some funding. I'm glad to say that we've invested more than $1 million looking at some of the renovations that are needed to the current dialysis hospice units, Mr. Speaker, but we recognize the need to get out into more communities and support those Nova Scotians who are seeking services like dialysis, and we will be making more announcements as we move forward, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to dialysis and the services that, they provide Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, it's interesting that we mention and the Minister talks about investments and money, because the Hants Community Hospital Foundation has committed $80,000 to purchase dialysis machines for the use at Hants Community Hospital. So have others in the community come together to raise money for these machines, Mr. Speaker. Despite this commitment, the NDP refuses to consider expanding dialysis service to Windsor, even if the machines are purchased by the Foundation. In his former profession, I know the Minister saw firsthand the mental, physical, and financial anguish dialysis patients suffer from, Mr. Speaker, because I sat in that same ambulance with him while we transferred these patients around. And I know that he understands very clearly the situation, Mr. Speaker. So I would ask again, Mr. Speaker, why is the Minister refusing an area that is ready, willing, and able to accommodate dialysis services with financial means and a physical location?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. I know he's very concerned around patients in Nova Scotia who receive dialysis and in those services. We know that it's been a burden on many Nova Scotians over a number of years, Mr. Speaker, especially the time taken to travel to seek these treatments. This is not something that you just receive one treatment and that is it. It's multiple days of traveling. That's why we're continuing to invest in dialysis throughout the province. We know that communities have offered funding machines or certain material, Mr. Speaker, or equipment for dialysis, but there's more to it than just providing the capital funding for that that piece of equipment, Mr. Speaker. These are professionals that need certain training, and no question, you need to ensure that they have the number of patients in a certain area to ensure that they can provide those services and continue a continuity of care. So I look forward in the coming months. I hope the member opposite recognizes the movement we've done so far in dialysis, and we'll have more information around services throughout Nova Scotia of the investment that this government is making when it comes to dialysis services in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, today more than 1,600 fishing vessels left from ports in six counties for the start of lobster season in southwest Nova Scotia. I'm sure all members will join me in wishing the captains and their crews a safe and prosperous season. Speaker, a dangerous profession on a good day. These fishermen have set out not knowing what price they will receive for their lobster when they return to shore. But my question for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture is, what efforts is the Minister making to ensure lobster fishermen in Nova Scotia receive the best possible price for their catch?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much, and to the member opposite, it certainly is a very timely question. I certainly welcome the question to the floor of the House of Assembly here. And what we're doing are, Mr. Speaker, and I know you alluded to the fact that, not to be long-winded, but I'd like to have the time to explain what we are doing. And because we have worked, first of all, we have financed the Lobster Council of Canada, which belongs to the five Atlantic provinces. We have And most recently had a special meeting, Mr. Speaker, the member opposite may be interested. We had a special meeting with the ministers from the provincial governments in the last 3 weeks dealing with this very topic. We're very sensitive to the issue of low prices in the lobster industry. And again, like the owner-operator policy, this is the first government, first minister to stand and make a public statement about owner-operator, and we stood up to the federal government about that, and we're standing by our inshore fisheries during our lobster season. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
I'm not quite sure how owner-operator is going to help the price of lobster in Nova Scotia this year, but it's interesting because while the Minister may claim he was vocal on owner-operator, I can tell you we certainly didn't hear much from him about the federal government's changes to the employment insurance program that could have a devastating impact on the inshore fishery in this province. Speaker, the minister is well versed in the high cost of running one of these fishing operations. Fuel, gear, and other associated costs quickly add up, and recently lobster fishermen have not been receiving an appropriate amount for their catch. Higher lobster prices means more money for fishermen, and Mr. Speaker, it means more revenue for our province. So can the minister advise what specific efforts his department has undertaken to assist in marketing Nova Scotia lobster?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Again, thank you, Member Opposite, for the question. What we have doing is a considerable amount. We have been working with the industry, not only with the Lobster Council of Canada, who has an initiative in marketing and branding lobsters, something that the previous opposition on both sides, both parties, had an opportunity. And I'll point back, I'm very familiar with this question, because I remember 20 years ago we were going through the same situation, Mr. Speaker, and the member opposite may recall that the both parties had an opportunity to deal with them issues 20 years ago, and they failed to do any of the above. We are working with the industry. We have established the Lobster Council, and we are standing by the inshore fishing industry. Thank you very much for the question.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Speaker, 20 years ago I was in high school, so the Minister will have to forgive me if I wasn't able to do anything on better lobster prices back then. Speaker, you know, and I find it unfortunate the Minister would say that, because he was a critic on this side when the previous Conservative government and the previous Minister of Fisheries, the member for Guysborough Eastern Shore at the time, led a delegation overseas and started a program where cooks from Nova Scotia were going all around the world to teach people how to cook lobster and eat Nova Scotia lobster. So for him not even to acknowledge that, I think, is certainly unfortunate, to say the least. Mr. Speaker, the landed value of lobster in Nova Scotia for 2010 was worth $195 million and accounted for 49.2% of Canadian lobster. So it obviously contributes a tremendous amount to the economic development of this province. Mr. Speaker, fishermen are not very positive with the price per pound that they'll receive this year. Most are saying they need at least $5 a pound to be able to break even. There are certainly fears that it will be well below that. So again, my final question is, what plans does the minister have to assist and open new markets for those in the lobster industry, especially if the price this year is again well below what fishermen need to make ends meet?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, again, thank you for the question, and again, I want to relate to the member opposite, both parties, that the fishing industry basically has been very successful in the last two decades. Last three decades, actually, their production has tripled in the last three decades. And also, I want to take into fact, this is the first government that we initiated, the Lobster Council of Canada. I'm very proud of that. And we are also working on international markets. Yes, there's opportunities there, but we are also working with the industry, and we stood up for the independent fisherman and owner-operator. We stood up on protection of Georges Bank, and we'll stand up on the fishing industry, the lobster industry of Nova Scotia. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Mr. Speaker, Robbie Fraser and Greg McDonald, two young engineers, founded Harbourside Engineering Consultants, the largest independently owned structural engineering firm in Nova Scotia. They wrote to the Premier concerned about the NDP's recent payroll rebate to a large Alberta engineering firm, Projects. HEC's largest corporate challenge is retaining employees in a highly competitive marketplace. So my question to the Deputy Premier is, will the Deputy Premier protect our existing Nova Scotia firms and make sure that the payroll rebate to Projects will not apply to engineers poached from existing Nova Scotia firms?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, what we will do is we'll protect good jobs coming to Nova Scotia. We'll take jobs from Alberta and bring them here, Mr. Speaker. That's what we'll do.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, those good jobs are already here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, engineering firms like HEC will now see their own tax dollars used against them as they are forced to compete with a firm with an unfair advantage from this government. There is already a highly competitive market for engineering work here. Shuffling an engineer from one Nova Scotia firm to another is not a job creation. So my question to the Deputy Premier is, will he make sure the payroll rebate to Projects will not apply to engineers poached from existing firms in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, if we missed this opportunity, Mr. Speaker, these jobs would have stayed in Alberta, but they're not, Mr. Speaker. There was already 1,200 applications, Mr. Speaker. Of that, 700 are from outside this province. That's what I call job creation in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the market for engineers in Nova Scotia is highly competitive. The role of government is to create the right conditions so companies like Project and HEC want to stay and grow here without government subsidies. One senior engineer with HEC was offered almost 50% more to switch to Projects. Local firms cannot compete with that kind of government interference. So my question is, will the Deputy Premier get on with lowering taxes, stopping wasteful spending, and allow firms like Project HEC to create more jobs in Nova Scotia without government subsidies?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the only thing I got out of that question is they don't want projects here in Nova Scotia. Well, Mr. Speaker, this government does want them here. This government will go ahead with people that will work in this province, as he has said himself, Mr. Speaker, well-paying jobs that will pay taxes, that will allow us to look after our schools, look after our hospitals, and look after the most vulnerable, Mr. Speaker. That's what we're going to do.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North, Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Yesterday, lawyers for opponents of Muskrat Falls were in federal court arguing that the proposed project never got a full environmental review. And lawyers representing the Sierra Club of Canada and the Grand River Keeper Labrador say the joint federal-provincial panel did not complete the assessment, and therefore the work can't lawfully support Ottawa's approval. Mr. Speaker, the opponents say that the panel failed to completely study the need for the dam and the power station and other alternatives. Now, the problem with this is the NDP and Emera have tethered Nova Scotia to this project to meet the renewable energy targets, and while the government claims that it's well-intended, every day we hear of another potential roadblock that, even if it doesn't kill the project, may delay it. So, Mr. Speaker, it's increasingly apparent that the government needs a plan B. What alternatives is the NDP government looking at in the event the Muskrat Falls project is delayed or falls through?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, of course, the Muskrat Falls project is a part of our portfolio of energy sources. We're blessed here in Nova Scotia with many homegrown sources, not only hydroelectricity from our neighboring province, which will add up to about 8 to 10% of our total electricity needs when it comes on stream. But we also have wind and tidal and sustainable biomass, our own homegrown hydroelectricity, even cleaner natural gas. So it's a portfolio mix. Unlike past governments that have relied entirely on coal or entirely on oil, we're spreading the risk around. And unlike past Liberal governments that have want to do away with our efficiency in Nova Scotia or want to deregulate the market, we have a plan. We have a whole portfolio of homegrown sources that will supply Nova Scotia at a reasonable rate for many, many years to come.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to find out where the Minister gets his fairy tales. He just called the Muskrat Falls project and part of the portfolio today, which kind of presumes that the URB will approve the project, which he said it's not presumed, yet the government is already relying on it. You know, Mr. Speaker, this isn't the only hurdle, and although it's a serious concern that the environmental assessment, and that's why it's before the federal court, we also don't know things about the water supply jurisdiction with Quebec, potential damage to fish and other wildlife habit, and so forth. You know, Mr. Speaker, this minister has called this a green project, and yet the environmental assessment hasn't been complete. And now there are serious concerns that have been raised about wildlife habitat. And today we understand that while the Innu Nation has agreed to their land claim settlement, the Inuit and Métis communities are pointing out that as yet their concerns have not been addressed. So, Mr. Speaker, does the minister believe in the principle that a project of this magnitude and the benefits the NDP claim are there should ensure that concerns of the Inuit and Métis people are addressed and that the federal environmental assessment should be completed prior to Nova Scotia taking energy from this project, or does he believe those concerns don't matter?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and as the Honourable Member knows, this issue is before the courts, and we'll determine what they will find out. This project will be before our Utilities and Review Board to determine what is fair and just for Nova Scotians, and I'm sure they'll determine that it is the lowest fares rates for our province. Unlike the Liberal Party that wants to deregulate electricity and put up rates by 30 to 50%, Nova Scotians cannot afford that.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, the Minister can make up all the fiction he wants about what the Liberals believe in, but the other day he stood in this House and said it was our Ratepayer Protection Act that causes deregulation, but he clearly hasn't read it, and maybe he should take the time this weekend to do that. You know, Mr. Speaker, the minister just agreed that it's before the courts, which is exactly why we need a plan B, in case it doesn't make it through the courts. You know, the URB has been constrained by time and the fact the government has no plan B. Now we learn that analysts looking at the Emera stock are salivating over the profits this project will bring for Emera, and I will table that. Mr. Speaker, why is the minister more concerned about protecting Emera's profits than he is about making sure that Nova Scotians have answers that they deserve on this project? And why doesn't the minister know the cost to ratepayers for this project now, before saying it's a good deal?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. All I know is the Liberal government in the past have put up rates. They've depended on coal, depended on oil. They just had a one-track mind and all their eggs really in one basket, whereas this government does have a plan. We have a renewable electricity plan that was passed to this House in 2010. We're looking at hydroelectricity, certainly. We're looking at wind. We're looking at tidal. We're looking at sustainable biomass, clean natural gas, and other sources that we're blessed with here in Nova Scotia. Unlike Liberal governments that want to take the HST off of home energy, they want to do away with efficiency in Nova Scotia, and they want to jack up our rates by 30 to 50% with deregulation.
Shameful. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, the Minister one day, I'm sure, will actually read the bills. He'll also maybe read the independent international UN assessment on competition in the market, which has showed that in every jurisdiction it's been brought in the past few years, rates have decreased. Mr. Speaker, he may also want to note that Liberals have spoken against deregulation and spoken against returning the HST to, and we believe that efficiency in Nova Scotia should be paid for by shareholders. Mr. Speaker, we have learned from Statistics Canada, and I'll table that under the NDP, power rates and energy rates have increased more than in any other province in this country. So, Mr. Speaker, why has the minister failed to do a single thing to stem the rising cost of energy in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, you know, we have done a good number of things to try to stabilize power rates in this province. First of all, when we came to power, we took the HST off of home energy. That's a 10% saving right off the top. We have a renewable electricity plan. We have large wind projects. We have a ComFit project. We've worked very hard with efficiency in Nova Scotia to save low-income Nova Scotians a considerable amount on their electricity bills, something the Liberal government wants to do away with. We want to keep the efficiency in Nova Scotia within our province.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Energy Minister is slipping already, but it's all right because the Liberal government's coming after the next election. You know, Mr. Speaker, this is the government that added a new tax to electricity bills. This is a government that changed the regulations so that Nova Scotia Power could earn more profit off of ratepayers while they were reducing energy usage. This is a government that has stood behind Nova Scotia Power instead of ratepayers. Mr. Speaker, let me quote the Premier from just a couple of years ago. Quote, what should be done, for example, with Nova Scotia Power? If the government really wanted to do cost recovery, if they wanted to get some money back to be used in their budget to this debt, because they have a debt of this year of $100 million, they would go back, look at Nova Scotia Power, and they would say, gee, we sold it for $141 million under value. Maybe we should bring in a windfall profit tax. Maybe we should tax back Nova Scotia Power some of the $141 million we gave away. That was a quote from the Premier in this legislature. Mr. Speaker, what has changed?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, what has changed? That we have a government with some vision, with a goal to get the lowest, fairest power rates in Nova Scotia. And a great part of that is the Lower Churchill, the Muskrat Falls project will bring lower stable rates for 35 years, and we'll hold at that rate for that length of time. It'll put us in an energy loop that will allow us for market rates to be available to Nova Scotians, and it will help reduce our greenhouse gases and provide thousands of good jobs here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, what the NDP claims to have done is about the same smoke and mirrors as the leader of the third party, first claiming he would freeze power rates, and then admitting today that that excludes the fuel adjustment mechanism where the majority of increases have come from. What this government has succeeded in doing is having the highest energy increases in the country over their term. You know, Mr. Speaker, for more than 3 years, the people of Nova Scotia pleaded with this government to do something they thought they voted for the NDP, looks like they voted for Nova Scotia Power. Mr. Speaker, the former Minister of Finance defended Nova Scotia's rate of return, and other cabinet members have done the same thing. Yet even Nova Scotia Power agreed to a reduction in the rate of return, and the board's consultant said it could have been dropped to 6.8%. So, Mr. Speaker, why are the profits of Nova Scotia Power more important to the NDP than... Mr. Speaker, why are the profits of Nova Scotia Power so much more important to the NDP now than they were when they were in opposition?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I mentioned the Liberal Party wants to deregulate electricity, and really all that's going to do is create more head offices here. It's going to provide more executive bonuses, higher salaries, more profits. We don't need deregulation.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Deputy Premier. Rural Nova Scotia has felt the ill effects of the NDP and their job elimination policies more than anyone. Nova Scotia as a whole has lost 7,400 full-time jobs within the last 3 years. During the same time, rural Nova Scotia's population has dropped by 8,200 residents. My question, Mr. Speaker, is will the Deputy Premier admit that the time for study is over and it's time to take action to revive Nova Scotia's rural economy?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I suppose the member would disagree with me, but we can do more than one thing at a time. And one thing, Mr. Speaker, we are going to study the rural economy. But the other side, Mr. Speaker, we're doing action. I would ask him to ask one of his seatmates over there if he disagrees what we did around New Page and Pardoxbury paper. I think that was a strong investment and a strong voice in the Strait region that we support jobs in the rural areas. If he disagrees with that, well, I don't know, Mr. Speaker. But we support rural Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, according to a report that was tabled in this House last week, rural Nova Scotia is in a year of negative growth. The NDP policies have failed rural Nova Scotia so badly that they are in a recession. As an example of how devastated rural Nova Scotia is, Mr. Speaker, Cape Breton has an unemployment rate of 16.4%. That's unacceptable, Mr. Speaker. Now, will the minister admit that the time for study is over and it's time to take action to revive Nova Scotia's rural economy?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I don't know whether the member didn't hear the last answer or just decided not to hear it, but, Mr. Speaker, like, we have invested in rural Nova Scotia. We're taking jobs out of Halifax and putting them in rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. We're helping people, you know, Mr. Speaker, in various regions. I mentioned the Strait area all over this province, Mr. Speaker, but they refuse to see this, Mr. Speaker. So I don't know what more I can tell those members over there, but we are doing what they failed to do for years and years,
right,
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, you're taking jobs from Windsor and moving them to another part of rural Nova Scotia is not taking jobs out of Halifax. That's just shifting jobs around in areas that are already suffering, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia's rural economy is sick. It's sick, Mr. Speaker. The only way that companies will invest in this province is under the job elimination policies that this government has put in place is through the bribes that they provide, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia deserves better. Lower taxes, end the wasteful spending, and more jobs. Will the minister admit that the time for study is over and it's time to take action, real action, to revive the Nova Scotia's rural economy?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the time is over for study. We're doing it. Mr. Speaker, I want to again ask the member if he disagrees with the Tourism Association going to Windsor, the seatmate's right in front of him. If he's against that, Mr. Speaker, I think that's taking jobs out of Halifax and putting them in areas. And this, you know, this I think we represent, Mr. Speaker. So these are issues that we're doing. But what has that group done federally, Mr. Speaker? We see the excess, the getting rid of Service Nova Scotia jobs, the call center in Glace Bay, Mr. Speaker, the golf course in Inganish. We can go on. There's a litany of the federal government has done Lewisburg, Mr. Speaker, all these icons of Nova Scotia that they're meeting here in Halifax today. Why don't they go down? Why don't they go down and tell the people of the tourism industry that are meeting in Halifax today a big, I'm sorry for my federal cousins for doing it to the tourism industry in this great province, Mr. Speaker. That's what they should. I'm hearing the members saying I should be ashamed of myself. Mr. Speaker, I'll walk down any street in any town, any city in this province and keep my head up and say, we've done the right thing, Mr. Speaker. I will do it. It's not a matter of being like Mr. Speaker. It's a matter about doing the right thing.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the ability for Nova Scotians to travel our secondary roads has become increasingly more difficult, more treacherous under the NDP government. One in particular, which runs from Highway 10 to Highway 12 through Cherryfield, East Dalhousie, and the 40s, is in fact in deplorable condition. And my question to the minister is, what plan of action does he have to repair this stretch of highway in the very near future?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. I should tell the member that, and all members of the House, that we examine and review all of our roads on an annual basis, and with input from good members like the one opposite, who bring to our attention particular needs, we are able to do even a better job because of people like him coming forward and explaining to us and showing us the need. I want the member to know that before the House rises, I intend to have...
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has run out. I will now recognize the Honourable Government Host Leader.
That private local bill. Speaker, could you please call private local bills for second reading, Mr. Speaker?
Private and local bills.
Mr. Speaker, could you please call Bill 146, the East Hants Curling Club Arena Act?
Bill number 136, the Honourable 146, the Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure members in the House would be aware, but certainly some years ago, in the provincial.